You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Okay. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Soul Chronicles podcast, where we talk about our life and times in the sneaker, sports, and entertainment industries and some of the amazing people we met along the way. My name is Mohammed Al-Muhajir. I'm one of the co-hosts along with...
Hey, everybody. I'm Nikita Newell-Hall. Thanks so much for joining us for another exciting episode.
Nikita, so why don't you go ahead and just, you know, give an intro to our guest. I know we say every time it's an amazing guest, but you know, this is no, next level. No.
Mohammeda, we have really outdone ourselves this time. No, we have really, really outdone ourselves. So our guest today, I don't even know how to describe this person. Like, the words escape me. But what I'll say is, this guy is more than a visionary. He's more than an ad guy. He's more than a creative. He is one of the most unique individuals I have ever met. He's managed to craft for himself a legendary career, creating some of the most memorable pieces of content that the world has seen. And I'm so happy to call him my brother and my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Jimmy Smith.
Whoosh! Woo-hoo. That's the audience.
What's good, ladies? How y'all be?
Hey, great to have you with us today, Jimmy.
Hey, good to be here. Good. It's an honor. It's an honor. Y'all have a lot to do with some of the stuff that I've done over the years. So that's what's up.
So good. We want to talk about that because you know what? We actually started this podcast, Jimmy, because we have like all these stories and these amazing experiences, and it's just not something you can just bring up in everyday conversation. Like, yeah, the time that I booked Snoop for this commercial, or like, nobody wants to hear it. Like, you just sound like you're like bragging or something. But I was like, these stories just can't die, like, you know. So we were like, let's just start a podcast, even if it's just for ourselves, just to kind of like share these experiences and the impact that we've actually been able to have. So That's what it's all about.
No doubt. I'm excited. And I love y'all's name, The Soul Chronicles. S-O-L-E. That's off the skillet. Yes.
Thank you. And you know, Jimmy, I have to start at the beginning. So that means we got to go way back. You know, I first met you during sort of probably like my first year or so at Nike. I was running their music program out of LA, just making sure that the Nike brand remained prominent on the most influential, most important A-list music celebrities. And you at the time, I believe, were at Wieden & Kennedy?
Yeah, 100%.
What? Yeah, so talk to me about what you were doing at Wieden & Kennedy during that time. And why the music piece was important and integral to what you were creating, which led us to be working together.
Shoot, we worked on so much stuff, Nikita and Mohammed. Y'all got to tell me which ones you want to dive into, because it was so between City Attack for starting off in New York, where we were, there was the overarching campaign for Nike, which was, you know, Jordan and Barkley and Pippen and David Robinson and so on and so forth. And they felt like at the time, this is like 94, 95, 96, felt like they were losing the streets and wanted something to connect with the folks of New York City, with the folks of LA. And like, for instance, I remember Muhammada is how I met 50 Cent before he was 50.
What? These are stories I don't even know. Wait. Jimmy, before you talk about the project, tell us what your role was at Wieden. And you know what I mean? Like, let's hear a little bit about that.
My role at Wieden, I was started off as a writer. And, I was just a senior level writer. I don't even know if I was senior level. I came from Muscadero Chin, where it was the first multicultural ad agency. And I was a creative director there, but this is a little small shop. And getting into Wyden, you know, that was the big leagues. That was like, that was the big leagues. Not that we weren't doing big league work at Muse. We were, but we didn't have that massive Nike account. So when I came there,
You weren't getting big league money.
So I came in as a writer, and I got to work with the legendary John Jay. I call him Dr. J. And Dan, you know, Wyden, that's one of my mentors. And between him and Scott Bedberry, getting me into Wyden, and you know, that's where my career really took off, and that's where I met y'all.
So you moved from being a writer to what level? Because you were definitely not a writer when we worked with you.
No, I was.
Really? I thought you were like a creative director or something.
No. I was a creative director at Muse Cordero Chin. Dan, when I had my, you had to go in and prove yourself. And I'll never forget when I had my first review at Wyden, my first year there, I came in at March of 94 and Dan said, "We didn't know you were that good." It's like, yeah, I was that good. I was just willing to be demoted just so I could get my foot in the door, right?
Mm-hmm. Powerful lesson right there.
Yeah, I took a lesser salary and a lesser title just so I could get into the door. So when I met both of you all, it was like, yeah, my title was writer, but I was doing creative director work from, probably from the jump.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I had no idea. Wow. So
fast forward to City Attack. So now that we know a little bit about your background, kind of how you came to this work. Now we can get into like some of the really exciting ads that you worked on. I love the story that you started telling us about City Attack. And you were saying that this was around the time when you met 50 Cent before he was 50 Cent.
Met 50 before he was 50. But I don't know which one of you all, it was always one of you all was connecting me with somebody new, right? It was like, oh, thank you, Nikita. Thank you, Muhammad. Because I know my basketball world, right? Street basketball, pro basketball and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't necessarily know the music artists. And the music artists and the actors, Hollywood actors and all that came by way of you all. So I'll never forget. I was sitting in a room, one of the high rises, and there we walk in. There's 50. He's got on a bulletproof vest, and it was like, "Yo, dude, do I need to be concerned? Why?" You know something I don't? I don't have on the bulletproof vest. Oh, and he was telling me his son had to wear one too. And I was like, damn. And then I remember, it was between 50 and, this wasn't even a City Attack joint. It was between 50 and Joe Budden's. We were doing a joint for Vince Carter, and it was running in Canada. And we ended up doing a Broadway show thing. Y'all remember that?
It was I remember you were working on that.
Yep, and we went with Joe as opposed to 50. Now everybody goes, "Well, why would you do that?" You got to understand, at that time, both of them were hot, bubbling up to being super hot, but both of them were hot. And Def Jam, I believe both of them were on, 50, yes. I think, was doing that, getting ready to do the Aftermath thing.
Okay.
And Joe was on Def Jam. And so it was like, which one are we going? And they were both dope. You couldn't go wrong with either one, long-term looking in hindsight. Yeah, it should have been 50, but you didn't know at the time. But that came through y'all. And also I met M's manager at the time, Rosenberg.
Yep, Pete Rosenberg.
Rosenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Met him through y'all, and I'll never forget, we had, this is when I learned a valuable lesson. We presented an idea for Eminem to Nike. M was coming on his second album. Album hadn't dropped yet, but it was about ready to drop. And I'll never forget, the exec said, Nike didn't know who Eminem was. And I was like, damn. I was trying to get, because at that time I was trying to get more hip hop infused into the Nike work. And I figured, okay, you know, some of these cats on the national level may be too hot for Nike to, in their minds. And it wouldn't be that case today, but at the time in their minds that maybe they may not get it. But I figured they'd get the white hip hop artist who is a legendary Hall of Fame hip hop cat. So surely we can do Eminem, but they didn't know who he was. But they did go ahead and present the idea to Rosenberg. And when I was sitting in his office, I'd forgotten about it, because all I came back to me was, yeah, M doesn't want to do it. And so it's not happening. I said, damn, that was a dope ass idea too. So I'm sitting in his office. I've forgotten about it. He said, yeah, some of the execs, he didn't know I was connected with this idea, right? So he's telling me all about this idea. And he had enough touches where I said, he's talking about the idea I had, but it's not the same, you know, it's like bastardized. It, the way he was presenting it back was fucked up. And I was like, that's not the idea, dude. The idea was to, and I spelled it out to him. He said, well, shit, if I would have known that, we would have done it. I thought what they presented to me was whack. So I learned the lesson that if you're going to sell this shit, you have to do it, present it yourself if it's going to be presented right.
Right.
100%. And I think, you know, you've touched on so many things that have really been sort of the bane of our existence through the years is, number one, having a vision for a brand in terms of how to connect them to pop culture, knowing what's hot, what's relevant, and what's going to continue to pop, and trying to convince these people that, yeah, you haven't heard of this yet. That's the whole point of being ahead of the game. We're telling you this is what's gonna be hot, right? So that's the biggest boulder to push up a mountain ever in terms of a brand activation, is trying to get people to think differently and to trust your instincts. And the second thing is having those one-on-one relationships where you get the suits out of the way. Don't talk to the artist. You don't talk to the management. You let us handle that, because you don't know half what you're talking about, and you're not going to present it the right way. Well, why is that? Number one, you don't believe in it. And number two, you don't have a passion for it. And it's not your idea. So you're right, Jimmy. There's just so much control that through the years we were always fighting to maintain so that we can preserve the integrity of our ideas.
And preserve it on their behalf. We're trying to help you, Chief.
Yo, it's so funny, even at Nike, God bless them, you know, people would always be like, Nike's such a dope brand, Nike's such a this, Nike's, and I'd be like, I don't even understand how. If you saw what was going on in these halls, in some of these conversations, we'd be having trying to convince them. It's your floor.
It's I just never did understand. This is the part I never did understand. Two things. One is, you know, like when you go to a doctor, once you're comfortable with your doctor, and, you know, whether it's a pediatrician for your son or daughter, or whatever the situation is, once you're comfortable and you've made a decision that this is my doc and I'm going to trust him or her and whatever, doesn't mean you don't ask questions and, you know, stuff like that. But it's fascinating to me, like if you go into a doctor and say, you know, doc, my neck hurts. And the doctor says, well, it's X, Y, and Z and what you need to do. You don't sit up there and go, my neck hurts, and what I want you to do is to perform surgery on my big toe, and that's going to make my neck feel better. You don't do that, right?
At all.
But yet they do it to us. Brands do it to us all of the time. And it's like, the part I don't understand, if you know that much, why don't you just do it yourself? why aren't you bothering me? Now that's one. But number two is also, I realize a great idea most likely is not great without the pushback. Mm-hmm. Okay. You need the pushback, at least most creators do, in order to gauge, did I really do something breakthrough? Did I really? Because if you're just doing things that are, everybody just goes, yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Something's wrong.
You probably didn't break through. You probably didn't do something that hadn't been seen before, is on next level. So I actually learned from working at Wyden and, you know, going through the gauntlet that was Wyden and Kennedy, getting past this creative director and that one and that one and that one, to the point where you could go ahead and present it to Nike. Because there was battles inside of, big time battles inside of Nike as well. I mean, Nike Freestyle almost didn't get made. It took like,
yo,
let's talk about it.
I legit was just about to, first of all, wait, we can't just talk about Freestyle. I have to set this up. You got to give me a.
All right, go ahead. Let's go.
We just can't jump into Freestyle, right? Okay. So, first of all, when you said groundbreaking ideas that usually are going to have some level of pushback to prove their greatness, Freestyle is literally the holy grail of that comment. Something that's never been seen before. Such a brilliant, bold, beautiful ad. But more than just an ad, I mean, that thing got down in your soul. And Jimmy, let me tell you this. I have to tell you this. So Monday, my big brother and my longtime friend Dorian Graham posts on his Facebook page the Freestyle.
Black Stallion. Black Stallion.
Posts the Freestyle ad and is like, I don't know how Jimmy Smith don't get all the credit he deserved, because this right here was the most incredible ad I have ever seen in my life, right? Then he went on to send me, and so I hit him up. I said, yo, this is so crazy you post this today. I'm talking to Jimmy Thursday on our podcast. He was like, yo, I helped Jimmy book some of the street ballers. I was like, what? I had no idea. He said, and Paul says that this is the best video he's ever directed in his entire career. I said, you know what, Jimmy Freestyle, please talk to us about this ad. Where did you get this from? How did you get this across and made? I need all the details on Freestyle.
I presented Freestyle when I was at Muscadero Chin in 1994. Now, I understand it didn't get made till 2001. Presented in 1994, and at that time we had a sliver of Nike, just a real small sliver.
Okay.
And Joe and I would periodically fly. Joe Muse would fly to Nike and fly and present them with, you know, ideas. And I remember one year we presented the Fly Jock, and it was going to star Martin Lawrence was going to be the Fly Jock, and it was for radio. And we presented it, and presented a version of Nike Freestyle where the beats created the hip hop. I mean, the beats came from the sounds of the game, and it was like, whatever. And Dan Wyden was in one of these meetings. And Dan, when we presented, he really liked one of the ideas that we presented. He said, I'm going to hire you. Wow. And I was all mad excited. Truly, you know, like, who wouldn't be, right? It's Dan Wyden. Mm-hmm. And that went down. I had to, everybody's heard the story. I had to write him a 5-page letter to finally consummate the deal that I would go to Wyden and Kennedy. And when I got in, it was in, now we're in, so that was 94, 4 years. So during the street ball, which y'all were involved, during the city attack, we were doing all these radio joints where the producer would create hip hop beats. These were all radio out of Sounds of the Game. And then we get in Supernatural. Y'all were bringing in Supernatural. There was Mad Skills, all these street freestyle artists. And they would rap over it, right? And then we started doing pole hop. If you remember poetry, my brother, the Tony Award winner. Then we started doing pole hop, where it was a mixture of poetry and rap over the hip hop beat that was made out of whistles, sneaker squeaks, net snapping, so on and so forth. And so then there was an assignment that came. I'll never forget it. If y'all remember Greg Johnson, y'all remember Greg?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So it was Greg and it was Rob DeFlorio, and it was for this shoe that was more for play. It was supposed to be free, free kids to play whatever they wanted to play. And that was the first time as a TV spot that we presented freestyle. And it was called freestyle. We took Bambaataa. We were going to hire Bambaataa to for him to be the producer to make the Sounds of the Game into a hip hop beat based on what was it? Planet Rock. Mm-hmm. I think based on Planet Rock. And we had Harlem Globetrotters imagery. We had Curly Neal, Marcus Haynes doing the thing along with the Dorians. And Dorian wasn't much for his dribble, but you know, like Pee Wee Kirkland and so on and so forth. Mixed in it, and they just didn't know what the fuck we were talking about. but they bought it, but their heart wasn't really in it, right? Their heart wasn't really in it. And at the time, Hal Curtis was the creative director, and what was the other creative director? He had red hair. Oh, I'm sorry, dude. You are my homie, and I can't forget. I'm forgetting your name, but he was from San Francisco. Chuck McBride. Okay. So they were the creative directors, but they didn't really quite understand what we presented. Now, Greg would deny it all day long. You never presented me freestyle. Yes, we did. Yes, we did, brother. You my boy, but you slept on that one.
You saw this before.
So that's 1998. So then 2001 comes along, and we need this whole big campaign. Praise the Lord. I only mean this in a healthy way. I mean it the way I mean it. Jim Riswald was on vacation. He was my boss on it at the time. He was gone on vacation. Jim was not going to get that. In fact, when he saw the rough cut of it, he said, good thing I was on vacation because I would have killed it. He told that to Jay Atta. So anyway, here's how I got made.
Got to shout out the answer.
This blows me away. So I'm sitting with my partner. Dan has put me and Hal together. Me and Hal fight like cats and dogs. He don't like me. I don't like him. He's the whitest dude I met. I'm the blackest dude he's met. And it ain't working, right? At least in our minds, it wasn't working. But Dan did that strategically. No, you two are going to work together. And so we're hating every minute of it. I know that if I present to him this idea, he's going to kill it. Mm-hmm. But it's perfect for the assignment. It's perfect. But I know if I tell him, hey, remember that thing we presented in 1998? You know, we should bring that back. He was going to kill it. So how am I going to get this joint sold? So he goes, you know, David Kennedy had this idea of doing the national anthem out of Sounds of the Game, you know, like Jimi Hendrix, only it's the Sounds of the Game. And that was my opening. I said, yeah, but instead of the national anthem, we should make
Planet Rock.
And he's like, yeah, that'd be cool. And I said, on top of that, we should take breakdancing, you know, it's freestyle, and we should have the dribbling, you know, have them doing freestyle. That's what they do in the street at Rucker Park, is just making that shit up as they dribble along. And we do the same thing, and we bring in breakdancing into it. And he goes, yeah. He didn't remember that he had, that's the same idea. Wow. Me and Tim Hanrahan, it was Tim Hanrahan too, had presented in 1998. He didn't remember that. He didn't remember the stuff that me and John Jay had been doing with the whole radio, with freestyle as radio. He didn't remember any of that. And again, thank the Lord. So he's going to be mad at me when he hears this, if he hears this story.
Oh, well. Oh, well.
Hey, no.
I love you, Hal, but this is what happened. So, and now I got to sell it to the client. And I've already told you how they didn't get Eminem. They didn't get this or that. And they didn't get freestyle at the time. So how are we going to do that? So we write it up. Hal presents it. I let the white dude present to the white dude over at, who was Todd Pendleton. And when Hal presented, it was amazing. I'm sitting there and he goes, and Rasheed Wallace, no, White Chocolate, Jason Williams, dribbles, passes it to Future. Future dribbles behind his back between his legs, passes it to Booger Smith. Booger goes between his legs, throws it to Vince Carter. Vince Carter does his thing, passes it to, and he presented as dry as that, as dry as I'm presenting it to you. Mm-hmm. That's how he presented it. And he presents it to, and he throws it to Rasheed, and Rasheed just looks, doesn't do anything, and throws the ball. And I'm going, this is dead in the water. There's no way in hell they're going to buy this. Where is all the Harlem Globetrotters? Where's the plant? He didn't even play Planet Rock, the song. And they go, yeah, that's a good idea. I learned something there.
Yeah, it's, we all know that story right there.
It's like White Cats are on FM and we on satellite, you know, radio. It's just a different wavelength, right? Mm-hmm. You know, both of them are cool, but it's like two ships passing in the night when it comes to where's the translation. Because it, to me, when I hear what he said, it has no flavor. It's devoid. It's like Sir Knows, devoid of funk. There was nothing in there. And anyway, they bought it. We went and we hired Paul Hunter and obviously shot it in New York. And then I'll say this one thing and then I'll shut up. So after it was made and it blew up. I'll never forget this, I think his name was Lee Davis, and he was an account exec. And I was sitting in a meeting when he was describing to a client what we did. And I'm like, that's what we did. It was like Wonder Bread, how he was describing. It was the kinetic energy of when you put kinetic movement with the what, and I say, you know, it just doesn't have the soul in it. And so when you're presenting, when us Black people are presenting these ideas and we're presenting them with the soul that we grew up on, from what we grew up on all the way up to today, like what makes, that beat by Migos so dope? What are the roots of what Lil Baby's doing and so on and so forth? Gunna, where is that when Gunna does that joint, you know? Where is that coming from? It's our backgrounds, our history is built into how we talk and communicate. They don't have that history, but we have their history, right? Because we had to watch mm-hmm. all of their shit on TV and listen to the music and what. So we have that historical. So when they present something that's whiter than white, from Animal House, and it's like some frat humor, we get it and can laugh at it and think it's funny, but they don't have that same connection when we present what we present. So it's always a game within a game within a game. So freestyle is now in the Smithsonian, it's in the African American Museum, but it didn't win shit at one show. It got a merit, not a gold, not a silver, not a bronze. Yeah. They had to beg to get it into Cannes, had to beg just to get it on the short list in Cannes. And here it is in museums, like the Smithsonian.
Wasn't there talk about a Broadway show at one point, Jimmy, or did I make that up?
Nope. We were absolutely going to do the Broadway show. Actually came to be before Nike Freestyle, because we had been doing City Attack, right? And we had been doing the radio. So we were going to start it with Pee Wee Kirkland's life story as the leading figure. And then it evolved into characters that we had created. And by the time Freestyle got made, that gave it some momentum. And Nike even put a little money behind it, put like $100,000 to try and get that thing off the ground. At one point, check this, Lin-Manuel was going to actually be the writer.
What?
Yeah.
I came and met with you about that. I don't know how far along or what you needed from my end on that, but I remember like meeting with you about this project.
Lin-Manuel, what you were going to do was help us with getting the musicians, because we got Questlove at one time.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that was before Quest was Quest.
Yep.
And I got Bootsy. I have a long-term friendship with him. Got Bootsy. But that's what you were doing, is like trying to find the musical artist to get behind it. And we dodged the bullet, because at one time we were thinking about R. Kelly. We dodged the bullet on
don't
that.
Don't even get me started. Like, please. Like, you really, I you don't even understand. I'm gonna just say this one thing and I'm gonna let it go. I don't even want to say the brand. So brand comes to me, wants to do a deal with the artist. I had just been in Chicago. I had a long-term relationship with that whole camp. I say to said multi-billion dollar brand in the family of the brand you're talking about. I say, no, this is not what you need to do. You already have enough going on with just managing the athletes who you have under contract. This is not a problem you want. They got mad at me because I would not let them sign him. I wouldn't even introduce them to him. I was like, it's a no. They got mad at me and then took all of their programming and hired an agency, an outside white agency, to do all of their stuff. When Muhammada and I have been putting their brand on since day one and doing all the hottest stuff with them, throwing the hottest parties, the hottest releases, everything, got mad because I wouldn't let them sign him, and took the business, and we were internal. So it wasn't costing them no money to work with us, and we were making it hot as it could be. Took it to the other people. I know they paid them millions of dollars. And I can't tell you one bomb thing that they did. So, yeah, you know.
It goes to what we're talking about, not listening.
100. Okay, but look, I got to get to some of our other projects, Jimmy. So,
okay.
So a bunch of bomb nuggets.
Real quick. We're going to leave. We'll go to Freestyle. This is the last thing I want to say. But so, you know, Nikita, how at Nike, every department would have to get behind a project, you know, and so they were like, Freestyle is the main focus right now. Every department, what are you going to do for Freestyle? So I was like, oh, well, actually, somebody wants to, you know, Trace Magazine wants to do a party, wanted me to sponsor their party. And I'm like, it can only make sense if it ties in with something that's an initiative, which happened to be Freestyle. So I was like, I can get some funds for the Freestyle and we can do a party. And we're going to talk about this in another episode. But it turns out that this party that I did, Alicia Keys was the cover of Trace, her very first cover, her very first album. And we had a party at Nike Town to celebrate the release of Freestyle. And Alicia Keys was the performer, and all the boys from the commercial were at Nike Town performing throughout the store. We'll talk about this in another one, but that was just, you know, more legs to Freestyle.
Wait, is that the one where you shut down 57th Street?
Yeah, that would be the one.
Okay, yeah, we'll let's put a pin in that, and we'll do an episode around that one, because I think we have Alicia Keys episode coming. So, but
well, hey, let me two things. Let me give two shout outs. Steve Boogie Brown, who is Bam's partner at the time. He had a lot to do with the music, as well as Bobbito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bobbito had a lot to do with, you know, in the early days of City Attack, you can't leave Bobbito, and Nigel Miguel. Y'all remember Nigel and
Nigel? Yes. Nate.
So
yes, and my boy Dorian Graham, of course.
We already had, you can't leave out.
I know, that's my brother. I can't help it. Okay, look, we gotta keep moving because all our schedules are jammed today.
Yeah.
So Jimmy, so much amazing Nike stuff. And we'll list some of the other Nike ads that you were instrumental in our bio and when we promote the episode out so people can see. But also, remember we did that Madonna spot with Biggie for
Motorola.
Wait, Jimmy, you called me like, Nikita, I need to book all these. I got this idea. And you know, the client is saying, I think it was Motorola. They're saying that it can't be done. The agency that they're working with is saying in the amount of time they want to book these 10 artists. I don't even know how many artists, Jimmy. They're saying it can't be done. Can you do this? Can you book these people? I was like, yup, I surely can. And we booked, I don't even know, Common, The Bravery, Maya, A. Marie, Iggy Pop, Little Richard. We booked so many people. Questlove,
Quest, remember? Quest was in it.
Was that?
I said Quest was in it.
So, well, yeah, we booked. You had moved from Wyden, or were you still at Wyden on this project?
No, I was at BBDO then.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he was at BBDO. And then Muhammad, remember, I called you because I needed you to come. We went to London for one day to shoot. And I got sick or something. I wasn't feeling it. I said, Muhammad, you got to come and help me in London on this shoot because Jimmy's going to kill me if this talent ain't right.
Right.
And so you came. And yeah. I remember the shoot was going well. Everything was wonderful. I got so sick. I remember just being in the green room, just laying on the couch or something, and then you were handling all the talent. And this was a whirlwind. Within like 2 weeks, we shot 10 talent in LA and in London. And that to me, Jimmy, that's one of my favorite ads. The Motorola Rocker.
That joint was hot. And then Biggie comes in at the end. Oh, and another Biggie, one.
No! And that another
was,
one.
What was the... What was the Mexican band, rock band? They were in it.
It wasn't a Mexican band, it was the Bravery.
No.
It was See, I didn't book them. I didn't book them and I didn't book Madonna.
Okay.
I know who you're talking about.
There was here's one that you were that they would not let us book, which was like it goes to what our earlier conversation where we started. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember, but they told us that they told us that Nas was past his prime. Do you remember that?
I do remember. So that's how I ended up getting Common, because we wanted Nas.
I was like, what the hell are you talking about? It's Nas. I mean, Common obviously was great. There's no doubt amazing about that. But sitting up there talking about Nas. It's not possible.
It's not something that can ever happen.
It's like
he's a legend.
What are you talking about? Those types of things are just mind altering. Like,
and wow, then just fighting, and even the tension on set was weird because the original agency and the people who said it couldn't be done were there on set. So that was crazy. So that was a good one. Okay, wait. Okay, we gotta talk about. I just feel like I'm running out of time. But Gatorade.
You forgot the G.
Huh?
That's what I was finna say. You forgot the G.
Right. So how would we come? Because you like as you move through your career, what would make you say I need to call Nikita?
Oh, that's my go-to. I mean, if I need, Nikita was behind Heaven Sent. That's what our own internal agency. Heaven Sent is where the dude jumped out of a plane with no parachute, no wingsuit, and landed safely. Bigger Than Us, which was the socially conscious.
Oh, that was amazing. I forgot about Bigger Than Us.
The Dame Lillard. And I the folks I was working with didn't get either one of those, didn't really want anything to do with it. And I said, well, I know somebody will get down. And that was obviously Nikita, and killed both. The media impressions on both of those are, I don't know where it ended up, but it was past a billion, north of a billion.
Yeah, so amazing. And then you called me on Gatorade, which, by the way, what you did for that brand, single-handedly bringing that brand into the 21st century, I haven't seen anything like it. I want you to talk about how you came to work on the business, what agency you were working at the time, and how you came up with That's G.
That one, it's always, you can't say single-handedly. I'm sitting up there working with like the iconic Lee Cloud. That's like, that's like working with Bill Russell. So I'm working with that dude. We got Jay Anta, we got Donna Lamar, we got Javier Castillo. I got a house squad. Lee let me build a multicultural team. You got Brent and Steve Howard. So,
Did you have Gia? Was Gia on your team, or is that another?
Gia was on the account service side. Gia was rocking it. Scott McMaster was the planner. And Bren Bardacki was on the account side. We had a house squad. So, and still to this day, inside of a general market agency, that the people who worked on that, Asians, Latinos, Black folks, white folks, just across, we had that type of group. My leadership is obviously Lee, me, but under that was Donna Lamar, Jayanta Jenkins, and Javier Castillo as creative directors.
Brilliant. A team, the A team.
Yeah.
So when they presented Gatorade to you, did they present Gatorade to you as a client, or did you decide that you wanted to go after Gatorade? How did you come to that business?
They were in the, I was at BBDO New York. I got to work on for David Lubars. It brought me to BBDO from Wyden. And I worked, and we did some dope stuff. You didn't even mention Instant Death with the Black Eyed Peas, but.
Right, I know. Yes, did you work on something? Was that for Mars or something, Andy?
What'd you say?
Was that Black Eyed Peas project, wasn't that for like a candy?
Snickers.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So I'm there at BBDO, and that's in the Omnicom network, as is Shia Day. So Element 79 or something like that in Chicago had Gatorade. Gatorade wanted to move it, and they wanted to move it to Shia. So I think Lee called up, or Lee and Lubars, however that went down. And the next thing I know, Lubars is saying, hey, Lee wants you to work on Gatorade. And I always wanted to work with Lee. That's like one of my heroes in the industry, right? So I always wanted to work for him. And so that was like, yeah, it's sports, is Gatorade, and it's Lee Cloud? Heck yeah. So I go over. And I didn't have to move because I was already in LA. And they told us we could change whatever. Whatever we wanted to do, they needed a reboot, they needed a relaunch, and we could do whatever. So we were gonna change the logo. That's where it started. And Lee brought in a bunch of logo designers, graphic designers. Jayanta brought in this cat named Sean. And everybody did their thing. All the designers did their thing. And Sean did this logo that was just the G. And that was, I looked at it and I said, well, shit, everybody wants to be G. Mm-hmm. We should build a campaign around the G. And that was it. Because, kids were saying all the time, yo, what's up, G? Mm-hmm. And still to this day, if I'm walking down, you know, depending on what neighborhood I'm walking in, say, what's up, OG? You know, everybody wants to be G still to this day. And so I just said, let's build it around that. I remember in the meeting, I said, well, everybody wants to be G. And nobody got the, on the client side, got what I was talking about. And Gia mm-hmm. jumped in. I'll never forget, Gia jumped in and goes, wait, I don't think you understand what Jimmy just said. He means that's, and she spelled it out for him, translated it for him, and we finally eventually sold it. And I remember being in a meeting with Indra Nui, and we presented the whole G, new design, new logo, the manifesto that I wrote around it. And she goes, I like the G. Indra Nui is from India, right? So she had her accent. She was the chairman CEO of Pepsi, which owns Gatorade. And I'll never forget, Jimmy, I like the G. Do you think the MTV generation will like it? And I said, well, yes, but we've moved on from the MTV generation. we're on to the millennials at that time. We're on to the next generation.
Right.
So it was scared the crap out of all of the, you know, everybody but Indra, which was amazing because she
yeah,
definitely.
And I ended up when you brought me on, Jimmy, because you had all these ideas. You were like, look, we're gonna come up with this bomb campaign, because remember you're trying to get Lil Wayne, and that was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And you were like, but from the influencer side, like, we needed to get some legs. Like, we could do all this work, but if we don't get it in front of the right people, it's not gonna matter.
That joint. So you had a hand in that whole suitcase, that silver suitcase thing with these bottles in it. And one of them you gave to Ted Chung, at that time, Snoop's manager. And that's still on YouTube to this day with him getting that package and opening it up and losing his
mind. But you know, that was the original unboxing. Nikita, I always be like, we started this influencer thing. Like, I wasn't seeing no other brands doing anything like that. That whole, I mean, I worked on that with you too. And we got like this cool streetwear company to design the hat with the G.
The hat was bananas.
And they pushed back on that hat. They pushed back on that hat to no end. You don't even understand. I had to die on a hill to get that hat included in the kit. And it was the dopest, a young Black designer.
Yeah.
This kid was so off the chain, Muhammada.
Mm-hmm.
You found him in New York, and it was just brilliant. But look, the most influential person, the biggest influencer of all influencers, we got it to Barack Obama.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
And
you're the queen.
No. The trip thing about that is, and I'm only going to say like two words about this and move on. But so number one, it was a case full of drinks. So number one, you can't ship liquids to the White House. Number two, Michelle Obama's kitchen was organic. So she would not have any artificial flavors, you can't send none of that over there. Like, it was just a no. I mean, having any kind of brand association, affiliation, trying to get that through the front door of the White House, it's like they have to be neutral. They can't. You do not even understand how many of my kids I had to sell to make this happen. And it was just the grace of God. That's all I'm going to say. And my dear friends in high places who make things happen. And not only that, we also had sent him the Jordan case. Remember, Jimmy, you did that brilliant Jordan ad in Chicago with the light box. What was it?
Light bright.
He calls Michael Jordan to tell him thank you for the thing that we sent, and then Michael calls Gatorade to be like, we sent him a thing. Wow. So I
have to tell y'all, both of you all, when that was the first time I had seen that type of shit with the influencer packaging and getting influencer involved, it was at the dawn. I mean, Bobita, obviously influencer and so on and so forth, but how you all were packaging, like you were talking about with the hats, with the suitcase, with the I remember Smoke still has that white jacket that we took to Sundance with the G on it. Yeah. All that stuff that you all were involved in, I hadn't seen that before. That was truly, you talk about me innovating, that was innovative shit. And it was at the dawn of social media. That's what made it so powerful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Muhammad, you know, has definitely been my right hand. You know, whenever you call me, I call Muhammad.
Yeah.
And together, you know, we get down and, you know, do what needs to be done to make things shine. And, you know, I just.
No, like Rob Bay said, it take two.
To make a thing go right.
Right.
And to do what? Make it out of sight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and Jimmy, did you work on Replay?
Oh, Replay, I named it Replay. Okay. Yeah, we created the sports and entertainment network, missiong.com. That's where Leave It On The Floor was on, if y'all remember that. With, who was the host? It was, what's my man's name? Derek. Derek Fines. Everybody knows him as Fines. Fines was the host. And on there were a bunch of shows, including the Blockheads, the animated Blockheads, and then obviously Replay.
Yeah, I mean, that was just amazing. And okay, so I have to take a little bit of time, Jimmy, for you to tell us about what you're doing now, where you are in your life, and kind of what is the future of content development and advertising in your world? Where is it going?
We are, it's going back to the old school. Back in the day, like, I mean, before, you know, oftentimes before we were born, the origins of Popeye the Sailor Man, and, you know, he ate spinach. Well, the spinach board got behind that because they needed to sell more spinach. So the farmers, that's one of the places that came from. And then take me out to the ball game, buy me some peanuts and what, Cracker Jacks. That's probably the oldest theme song, jingle, in history that's still sung to this day at every single baseball game, you know, in the majors, and it's the seventh inning stretch. And I don't know if you know, but the Peanuts Christmas special that's been running since Heck Was a Puppy was co-created by McCann Erickson. That was McCann Erickson, the ad agency's idea. They went to Coke and said, we should do a Peanuts special, Christmas special, and have Charles Schulz do it. That's where that came from, Coca-Cola. And then obviously I like to teach the world to sing. That went to number three on the Billboard charts. It's all going back towards that. And if you go move it up to the 90s, Space Jam, that was started off as a TV commercial, right? That Wieden and Kennedy had done, created by Jim Riswell. Started off as a TV commercial, becomes Space Jam, and so on and so on and so forth. Replay, you know, that became a TV show. That's where it's going, especially with all the streaming going on. You got to figure out ways where people are watching fewer and fewer TV commercials. You have to be something like the Super Bowl or a live event, live NFL game and whatnot, in order to actually see commercials, because most people record it, whatever the show is, and they just zip through the commercials. So you have to find ways like Replay to integrate yourself into a TV show, create the TV show, or do a music video, which is JBL was the Bigger Than Us with Dame Lillard, or Heaven Sent, that was Stride Gum, and their thing was Mad Intense. That was a TV show as what, you know, as well as a streaming show on YouTube, pay-per-view. That's where it's going. That's what my company does, Amusement Park Entertainment. I will do 30-second spots with the best of them because that's my background, that's my roots. But what we're doing now is even taking it a step further and creating our own products in which we're going to advertise our own products. So we'll own the product. You know, we've been making these brands bazillions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. And why not take all of that learning and apply it to our own products that we've created, which will make us even stronger when we go to a brand or a brand comes to us and helping them achieve their goals, because we've gone through the same things that they've gone through. So there's a more, even deeper understanding of what they're going through, why they make some of these boneheaded decisions sometimes, we will have experienced it. And so that's what we're doing right now. Right now we got a something I can't really talk about, but I can say who we're working with, Tiffany Haddish, on a docuseries that, if the Lord is willing and the dam don't break, it'll drop on Juneteenth.
Wow. Yeah. I love it. It's so amazing just to watch your career and just to see all the beautiful things you're doing and to see at this stage in the game that you've really taken ownership of your talent to be able to tell your story and to be able to own your own brands, employ the people you want to employ, and impact culture the way you want to. I think, you know, you definitely are my idol, and I hope that people hear your story, hear some of the things that you've been through and how you've had to incubate ideas sometimes for years, but were able to persevere and finally see them come to light and be presented in the public, forum, that will give them the strength that they need to keep going, to keep pushing with their ideas, right? To keep voting for themselves and believing in themselves and their goals and what they want to achieve. So I just, from the bottom of my heart, want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And I'm looking forward to what's next. So Muhammad, I'll leave you and Jimmy with the last words.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy, it's amazing to be in a position where we all were these young Black people able to support each other and help your vision come to life. You know what I mean? So that's when you know how important it is to be represented, you know, because if we weren't there and you had some other random people in entertainment marketing, maybe some of those visions that you had could not have, you know, fully been imagined. So yeah, we are out here supporting each other and have supported each other, and we're still here. Hopefully we'll be able to support you in some other things along the way, you know, but you've made some magic and I'm glad we were there to be a part of it.
Well, look, two things. One is I'm absolutely positive that I wouldn't be as successful without you two. There's no doubt in my mind. If y'all weren't in the mix, doing what you were doing and rounding up these, whether it's rounding up these folks or what about this person? Shit, I never thought of that one. That'd be hot. let's go with them. The places I've been, the things I've seen, is that's a Nikita Muhammad special. So thank you all. Appreciate you over all these years, and we'll keep taking it northward. And then I wouldn't be a artist creative if I didn't plug the Truth graphic novel, which I wrote over 20 years ago. It's available on Amazon, the Truth graphic novel. Check it out.
All right. And we'll put the link. You'll send us the link for that, and we'll put it in our bio in the episode. And of course, I got a shout out while we shouting out people. I got to shout out my girl Smoke, holding it down with you for all these years. Such a beautiful, beautiful woman, my sister, your wife, behind the scenes, making it all happen. So, hey, Smoke.
Smoke, doggy dog.
So, yeah, well, guys, as you see, we did not lie. This was definitely an amazing guest, an amazing story, amazing journey. We are thrilled to have Jimmy Smith on as a guest on the Soul Chronicles, where we share our life and times in the sneaker sports entertainment industry and the faces and people, personalities who are making it happen. Thank you all for joining us for the Soul Chronicles. Definitely follow us on all our social media platforms at the Soul Chronicles, where we'll be sharing some of these clips that Jimmy talked about today, some photos, whatever. Jimmy, dig in your archives and help us come up with some stuff we can share about this episode. But definitely stay tuned to the Soul Chronicles. Share comments if you listen to the episode today. Definitely, we always love to get feedback, to get your thoughts, and stay tuned to another episode of the Soul Chronicles soon.
Dig it. Peace and hair grease, y'all.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.